and welcome to Stories from the Bunker, the show in which we discover the weird and the wonderful, the strange and the supernatural. With me today, as always, is Alex.
Hello there, Martin. Are you? How's it going? You all right?
You got a bit confused there. Yes, very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad.
Good.
Robin is still getting a software update,
yes.
So he is not joining us today. I think they're improving his voice or something.
Well, he came back and it was a little bit off, so we had to send him back. Yeah. And as you may have noticed, if you're watching on YouTube, we have another very special guest. It is Sam from 101 Facts.
Oh, it's me. Okay. Oh, hello there. Hello.
Who are you?
I'm Sam. I'm from 101 Facts, but also I'm on All Time Tens as
indeed.
Well.
Indeed.
As that. I heard Robin was filled with Trojans, so couldn't
yes.
be here.
Yeah. Little miniature real Trojans.
That's very sad. But thank you for having me on, lads.
No, thank you for being
Uncovered.
Here. Yeah, no, thank you.
On
yes,
Uncovered.
Indeed.
Yes.
Uncovered. Stories from the Bunker from Uncovered. New name. Are you getting used to that?
Yeah, I think so, actually. It's actually settling in really well. I really like the name. We've spoken about how we kind of had to change the name because of YouTube, but I think we are actually really excited about the new name. I think it works really well.
Yeah, I think so. And thanks to you guys for your feedback in choosing the name and also the positive feedback we have since we've mentioned it. That's really, nice.
I'm sort of gutted you didn't go with my in-office name for you, which is Connie Boys.
Connie Boys. Yeah.
But it doesn't make sense now. Covey Boys? That sounds like a slur, isn't it?
I don't know how we'd explain that to our audience either. Oh, we've decided to change our name to Connie Boys.
It sounds like it could
be... We can't say the C word anymore.
No.
Oh, can you say it in... I'm sure you can say it in videos though, right?
C word? Not so sure.
Okay.
The C-O-N word?
Yeah. Oh, my Lord. No, not the other one.
C-U-N word. Anyway, so thank you very much, both of you, for joining me today
on
this episode. Alex, what are you going to discuss?
Well, Martin, I'm going to discuss... I'm going to go into the claims made by one Bob Lazar.
Oh, yes.
Have you heard of this fella, Sam?
Yeah, I have. I've come across him in various sort of research bits and pieces we've done for 101 and All Time Tens before. Also, really weirdly, last week, I think it was, I got home to my flat, which I share with my girlfriend, and I found a note...
From Bob Lazar?
With the name Bob Lazar written on it in handwriting that was from neither of us.
What?
Which is true. Although it's not as quite as, you know, and sexy and mysterious as it sounds. Because basically what happened was that her work friend wrote down his name and said, check him out. I'll direct her to this podcast.
Okay.
Well, you should.
Good.
Yeah.
So
please do. So your friend is a fan of Bob Lazar,
clearly,
it seems.
Bob Lazar. Yeah, Bob Lazar. Big Lazarite.
Lazarite? Yeah, that
or
works.
Or Lazarian.
Well,
sounds like sci-fi.
Well, hopefully by the end of today, both of you will be as well. Because I watched there's a new Netflix documentary. Well, actually, it came out last year. And I watched that this week, finally got around to watching it, which was bad. I feel like I felt guilty for not watching it until now. But it's surprisingly, really good and interesting. And yeah.
Cool.
Yeah,
oh,
would recommend
it. This week, actually.
Oh,
last,
yeah.
week, last week, Hobbs and Shaw.
I mean, that is incredible in its own right.
Incredible, great stuff.
Yeah,
great
lovely, stuff. Lovely stuff.
But Bob Lazar.
Bob Lazar.
Bobby.
Yeah. So you want me to talk about Bob Lazar, then I'm going to be talking about the possibility of 3D printing a human heart.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know what I was expecting, but wasn't that.
No. So a bit of science news for us.
Nice.
And then we'll
cool.
finish up with a little quiz that's a little bit different than usual. I hope you enjoy it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I'm not going to give too much away, but...
That's a bit quizzical.
Exactly.
Nice.
We'll see.
Like
so,
it.
Alex, do you want to start with Bob?
Absolutely.
Laser.
Okay, let's get into it. So obviously there was this documentary released last year, and there was a new appearance made by Bob on Joe Rogan's podcast, which came out a few weeks ago. I don't know if either of you watched it. But he's now once again been thrust into the limelight. So the story that Bob tells is incredibly in-depth and a huge amount of detail that I don't think we could possibly go into today. His story is very in-depth, and you really, to understand the story fully, you need to watch an interview with Bob Lazar and just see how kind of compelling he is as a person. But having said that, I want to go through like the major claims that he's made and look at the kind of evidence surrounding it, whether he's believable, whether there's anything that can back up his claims. So just to quickly summarize the Bob Lazar story. So Robert Lazar, born on January 26, 1959, he basically claimed in 1988 to 1989, he claimed to have worked at a site called S4, which was part of the Nevada test site, roughly 15 miles south of Area 51. Before this, he claimed to have achieved a master's degree from MIT and worked for a little while at the Los Alamos National Laboratory. So he was apparently hired at S4 to be a propulsion specialist, and he was tasked with reverse engineering the propulsion technology from an extraterrestrial craft, which was in possession by the US government. And apparently they had several of these extraterrestrial crafts. I think he said 8 or 9 of them they had.
Wow.
But he only apparently saw...
Quite the number. Yeah.
I think he saw them all in a hangar at one point. So he claimed that his predecessor in this role was killed in an accident where basically they tried to... Apparently it was like a desperate attempt that they made to try and understand the reactor that was powering this UFO. So they tried to cut into it with like a precision laser thing. And apparently it caused an explosion of similar magnitude to a tactical nuclear device.
And only one person died?
I think 2 people died. So there were 2 people in the previous role. Okay. And apparently they didn't do this.
They needed one replacement.
They didn't do this at Area 51, but on like a Nevada test site, and played it off as if it was a nuclear test.
I see.
Oh, right. Okay. I was going to say, how would they explain the mushroom cloud?
There you go.
But that's how.
So okay. I think they didn't know what was going to happen, so they probably had them in isolation doing it. I don't know why they couldn't have got a robot to do it.
It does seem quite weird to have a potentially very dangerous reactor that you don't know what it is, that somebody produces energy, just shoot a laser at it and see what happens.
Collateral, though. Has to be done.
Has to
be
done.
The advancement of humanity.
But also, Bob says, with some of his points, they didn't really tell him that much, so this is just kind of rumours that he heard. So he doesn't know for 100% sure that this is what happened.
I mean, that does help, doesn't it?
What, with his story?
Yeah. You don't know exactly is what happened. I mean, anyway, yes.
Anyway, so that was a claim that he made. He also said that due to the highly compartmentalized structure of the project, he didn't really know what other people were working on. He just kind of went into work and was working on the propulsion technology for this device.
And that's something that we see over and over again. We're even looking at the codebreakers of Bletchley Park.
Yeah.
They didn't know what each little bit the other person was working on for good reason.
And that makes a lot of sense in case any, like, there were whistleblowers that came forward.
Of course.
They wouldn't be able to get a full picture or take the secrets.
Having everyone know everything is... It's silly, really.
Yeah. Yes.
For that, especially when you're working on secret projects.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But despite this, he said that on one instance, he was allowed inside an alien craft, inside the UFO.
I'm glad you said craft.
The inside the flying saucer. And apparently he witnessed a test where he was just at work one day and they said, "Oh, come out, we're doing a test." And the flying saucer in front of him just levitated and they got to see that happen. And
how big was it? Do we know?
He did say, but it was quite big. I don't know specific measurements, but it was basically as you imagine it, I think. Quite big, but apparently inside there wasn't a huge amount inside, but there were chairs inside that were small.
I was going to ask how big were the chairs?
Yeah, yeah. Apparently, that was my first question. They were like, when you go to a primary school and they're all tiny.
They're like
tiny little wooden desks.
Yeah.
Like child's chairs, and apparently that was
the children are piloting these UFOs, right? Okay.
And apparently, the nickname that they had for the aliens were the kids, according to him.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I suppose because then you could talk about them in public, and no one would really bat an eyelid.
Exactly.
True. Yeah. Okay. So this
I dissected the kids yesterday.
Yeah. No one would bat an eyelid. this is giving a picture then of traditional grey, right? Traditional grey alien, small in stature.
Exactly. Yeah. Very traditional. This whole story so far is pretty much were working on flying saucers, flying discs.
Yeah, that just reminded me of Steph from All Time Gaming when he described in their podcast a grey alien. I can't remember in what context, and he said, "Big head, very skinny body," and I think
painfully so.
Yeah, and I think that probably sums it up.
Basically, yeah, that's a very apt description.
Your classic kind of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Kind of deal there.
Yeah. / Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah, Paul. Exactly. Paul. Yeah. Precisely. So basically he explained the way the craft worked. He was working on the propulsion, and from what they'd figured out of it so far was that it could create its own gravitational field. So he was working on this reactor core, which apparently could create its own gravitational field, and when it was switched on, his colleague, I think his name was Bobby or Barry, said, "Oh, try and touch it." And he tried to touch it and physically couldn't. It would like push his hands away.
Oh, like a magnet.
Like a magnet, but it wasn't magnetic, and it was pushing his hand away, which obviously wasn't magnetic.
Yeah.
So it was creating a gravitational field. And rather than using traditional methods of propulsion, meaning combustion or thrust, i.e. like a traditional engine is something comes out the back of the engine and pushes the vehicle forward.
Yeah.
This doesn't work like that. It basically works by creating like gravitational beams, and it would aim these beams in front of the craft, and that would basically alter the gravity in front of the craft and cause it to fall, but in that direction constantly.
Oh.
So it's like it's just falling.
Yeah.
And that's how they move about, basically.
Oh, right. Interesting.
Very, very bizarre.
Okay.
Which is interesting. He calls it a reactionless form of propulsion. There's no reaction taking place.
Good for the environment, too, I guess.
Good for the environment. Also, doesn't need that much explaining.
Well, I mean, you say this, and this is why I say watch an interview with him, because
I've seen interviews with him. Yeah, he is compelling.
Yeah. And I think
sounds like a dreamboat. This
he man. he goes into a lot of in-depth detail. And he also claimed that the fuel the craft used was an element not found on Earth, known as Element 115.
Mm.
So that's important to remember.
Yeah.
And so it kind of all fell apart towards the end, like after 6 months he spent there. He said that during this time, unbeknownst to him, the government were constantly monitoring him and his family. And basically, they were monitoring their employees to make sure nothing in their personal lives was going wrong that could compromise the secrecy of the program.
Yeah.
So they were looking at personal things that were going on in his life.
And that's something that always comes up when talking about Area 51 and the secrets hidden in Area 51.
Mm.
The fact that there aren't more whistleblowers who don't give more up-to-date details.
Mm. Yeah.
You really don't get that.
Yeah.
It's true.
Well, whistleblowers that are talking about aliens and extraterrestrial craft.
Well, it's what's interesting with Bob. He says that, like, if he could go back and do it all again, he wouldn't have said anything.
Mm.
He misses doing it, and he would have just stayed there and worked
on
it in silence. Mm. Yeah, it was only due to what he felt was necessity that he came forward with this. But he wishes he just hadn't said anything.
He took the kids away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the US government apparently found out that his wife was having an affair on him. Bob's wife was having an affair, but like because they were tracking their phone calls and that kind of thing.
Snap.
They didn't tell him initially, but apparently because they thought this could compromise the program, they just stopped calling him, and they kind of just, it slowly phased out.
Ghosted him.
So it was him. Basically contractual work. And yeah. They just didn't reply to him.
Yeah.
So why renew the contract.
Why did they think that would impede on the work?
In case it all came out and blackmailed
or something.
You know, I assume that this is the case regardless of whether there's aliens in Area 51 or it's, you know, you're working on military secrets.
Yeah.
The fact is they want people in there to be...
Who are psychologically sound.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay, fine.
It might be that would be the case regardless.
Yeah,
perhaps.
But anyway, during this time, he started feeling worried that they'd given him all these secrets and suddenly weren't contacting him, what had gone wrong. Mm. And he became naturally a bit worried about what was going on. So he told several close friends of his, what he was working on. And he knew the times that they would test this alien craft. So he said to his friends, don't take my word for it. Come out with me to this, to the desert on Wednesday evenings. He said that they tested
Naruto
the craft.
Mm. Nice.
Naruto run into the base.
Yeah.
No. And apparently they went there on over the course of 3 weeks on Wednesday nights. And the second time they actually took a video of an alien craft, this UFO.
Mm.
It's a classic UFO.
Of course. Oh, yeah.
You know, blurry dot in the sky. But apparently on the third time, security found them on the property, and he was basically interrogated by his supervisor, and they couldn't believe that he'd brought people to the property and were filming it. It was, yeah, bizarre. So at that point, that was when they showed him telephone records of his wife cheating on him, apparently. So he doesn't really go into much detail about that, but just says it's, you know, it was a hard time.
Yeah.
But they let him live, which is nice
yes.
of them.
I was going to say, I'm very surprised at that.
Now, yeah. I was going to say, do you think that all of the, sorry, go.
But why would they do that?
Let him live.
No. To show him the records of his wife running away with what, in my head, I imagine a fitness instructor.
But, well, he was actually a pilot, so.
Oh, wow. Oh, fair enough.
Of an alien craft.
Fair play to her.
Top Gun.
But why would they show him that? to say, well,
he doesn't actually. I couldn't.
You've been looking for aliens, mate.
Yeah,
could be an. Excuse to get rid of him. You're not of sound judgment in mind.
They could have been explaining why that they haven't contacted him.
Oh, okay.
Maybe, possibly.
Maybe, yeah.
But yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest. But anyway, yeah, they kind of let him go, and that was the last time he went into work.
I imagine up to this point, everything that those working inside Area 51, his superiors, said to him would have happened regardless of whether it was top military secrets or extraterrestrial life.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All of those. Like, I mean, they would have dismissed him if he was on the site with friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have happened, but those events would have happened even if it was just about new spacecraft, not spacecraft, new aircraft. And
yeah,
stuff
exactly.
Because they wouldn't want that to be leaked to the enemy.
Mm. Yeah, but I mean, I think he said that it was a very fierce interrogation. They put a gun to his head and stuff, and like he was very concerned. I think they wanted to make it clear, like, if you do anything, we'll kill you, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So following on from that, he naturally went to a reporter.
Oh, Bobby!
But he went to a reporter. The first interview he gave to George Knapp, who is known in the kind of extraterrestrial UFO reporting community. He also was a major reporter in Skinwalker Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
But he gave an interview to him and gave a long detailed interview where he made all these claims. And he said that his life has been threatened. His business has been raided by the FBI twice. Apparently he was shot at when he was on the highway one time. From a car behind him.
Mm.
And yeah, apparently the FBI suspect him of stealing some of this Element 115 from the base.
Does he confirm or deny this?
Well, I think he said it in 1989 that he managed to get some out, but since then has been like, no comment, doesn't say anything.
Oh,
he
right,
doesn't want to talk about it, kind of thing. He doesn't want to admit anything.
And I guess his justification of that would be because if I admit that I have, they'll be after me even more.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he hasn't written any books about this and kind of dropped off the radar for like 20-30 years. Yeah, he doesn't really do much in the way of publicity until very recently with this new documentary. He runs a lab called United Nuclear Scientific Equipment and Supplies, which sells a variety of materials, including radiation sensors, radioactive ores, non-radioactive elements, and powerful magnets and other scientific equipment. So that's his day job now.
This podcast is brought to you by them.
Other, you know, scientific labs are available.
Yeah.
But what do you get? So that's all the claims.
Big magnet, especially.
Yeah.
But that's all the claims that he's made. The major, the kind of outline. What do you think of them?
Well, you know, I'm like Alex. We've been on this podcast, what, 33 times now?
40. I think this might be the 40th podcast.
40 years.
33 plus 7.
40 weeks.
I tend to be fairly skeptical of these things.
Yeah, I think we've
said it in the past when we've spoken about it, but his details, his story is very detailed, but then he's had a long time to think about it. This is what we always comes back to.
True.
Yeah, at the same time, there are certain things that if you're thinking about this critically, he has made not detailed, or he doesn't have the information about them. And it seems fairly deliberate that he doesn't have the information regarding certain points.
Okay.
Like the supply chain of when he was working. It seems very strategic of parts that would be difficult to explain. He has openly upfront said, I don't have information on this. Mm. Whereas parts that are quite more easy to embellish, there's a lot of detail for.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair point.
And I wouldn't even deny that he worked there. That's the other thing. I wouldn't even deny that he worked there. But in terms of the existence of alien spacecraft, I think it's debatable whether he's actually seen it.
Mm. Mm. Okay. Sam, what are your thoughts?
Well, I kind of echo your point really about how a lot of this would have happened regardless of whether or not there were aliens there. So if he did work at Area 51 or near Area 51, I suppose, and there was, you know, intelligence secrets there, you conversely wouldn't want anyone to get out about those. And if you're the army or the military, same thing that I said, or... you would go to those measures to make sure that stuff doesn't get out, I suppose. And also, it kind of depends on the time. Like, so when did he come out with these claims?
1989.
Yeah, so there was already sort of a kind of culture around Area 51 of, oh, there's aliens there, there's the whole grey, you know, the kind of in the cultural consciousness, there was the appearance of grey aliens with big heads and small bodies and flying saucers and that kind of stuff.
I guess ever since Roswell in 1947.
Yeah, so it wasn't like so it wasn't like it was anything kind of new or groundbreaking. It kind of seems like he tapped into something that people were already thinking about and almost was saying, yeah, this is actually true, and here's why. I'm not sure why you necessarily would lie about all this.
Especially as he hasn't written any books or
made any money out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are my initial thoughts. Yeah. Must be said, I haven't seen the Bob Lazar documentary. I'll be interested to see it, whether that changes my opinion.
I will say about the documentary, and watch it for yourself and get your own opinion, but I think the person who made it, Jeremy Corbell, is the filmmaker who made it. It comes across like he's really trying to validate Bob Lazar's claims as opposed to seeking the truth. It seems like he's just trying to agree with him a lot. Maybe that's an unfair comment. What do you guys think?
I mean, when thinking about Area 51 in general, just the logistics of keeping something like that a secret. And as I said earlier, the fact that there's very few people that have come out of Area 51 and, you know, spread the word about there being extraterrestrial aircraft or extraterrestrials themselves in that facility.
Yeah.
It just makes me a little bit skeptical.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're doing, in fact, today, there's a video out on All Time Tens, which is, if I remember correctly, 10 insane theories about Area 51. So check that out after this. Have a bit of courtesy.
I'll put a card.
Yeah.
Thanks, mate.
Open it in a separate tab.
Yeah, watch it afterwards. But I'm going to ruin one entry for you right now. One theory that I quite like about it and does actually make a lot of sense is that Area 51 itself, because when one mentions Area 51, the immediate image you get is of an alien or of Roswell or of a spacecraft. And there's a theory that Area 51 kind of likes to put out that to draw attention away from other things.
Area 52.
Yeah, away from other things to that site itself.
It's a very good theory.
Which could well be the case. Mm-hmm.
Mirage Men. That's genuinely something that happened. People who claim to see a UFO, the men in black, were actually government agents, would go to their house and tell them, look, okay, fine, it was aliens. Shush. When actually it was a top secret military craft or something.
Yeah, because if you're more likely to get a negative reception, should we say, if you say, I saw an alien.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather than I saw an advanced military craft.
People would dismiss it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, let's go into some of the analysis for some of these points.
Please do.
So we run into problems right at this very beginning of Bob's story. So investigator George Knapp looked into his background. He found no records of his work at Los Alamos and no records of his attendance at MIT.
That's the issue.
Or his high school records, or even his birth record.
Is he an alien?
His birth certificate. Is he an alien?
Trying to spread the word about himself.
Yeah.
But this is weird for one reason. If he was lying and faking his story, why would he lie about where he went to high school?
Yeah.
And where he was born, or the year that he was born? Unless he's a serial liar. Like, you would lie about, sure, MIT and where you worked, but why would you lie
Maybe high school records would, I don't know, I'm purely speculating here, but maybe high school records would then create a chain where it's, okay, due to these whatever results at high school, he wouldn't have been able to get into MIT, wouldn't have been able to do this. Maybe it would make it pretty obvious that this couldn't have all happened. Perhaps.
Maybe. However, there is some evidence for this claim, for his claims. So in 1982, the Los Alamos Monitor newspaper ran a story on Bob Lazar because he was an eccentric person and he'd put a jet engine in his car.
Wow, that is some Fast and Furious stuff right there.
Exactly, yeah. So they ran a story on him, this eccentric scientist who put a jet engine in his car. And the article identifies Bob as a physicist at the Los Alamos Mason Physics Facility. So, I mean, Bob could have told them that. He could have lied. Mm. However, George Knapp found an internal phone directory from the Los Alamos facility, which listed the name Robert Lazar. Unless there was another one, there was a Robert Lazar working at the facility at the time.
Putting my tinfoil hat on.
Okay.
I'll put it on.
That is offensive here, so take it off.
That is offensive, I'm sorry. Yeah. But
trying to undermine us or what?
I'm not trying to undermine you. I'm just saying that I'm pointing things out. So anyway, no. So the whole thing of there being no records about him working there or going to MIT or going to high school, that kind of clearing up the past of the people that work there could just be standard procedure for when people join Area 51 to make sure they can't be tracked down or traced, basically.
Yeah.
Just in case, if they do need to disappear people,
So the impression I'm getting from you guys so far is that maybe he could have worked at Area 51, but maybe he's embellishing these kind of alien bits.
Perhaps.
Maybe. Maybe I'm playing devil's advocate slightly with the details of his school stuff, I suppose.
Well, there is some more evidence that can maybe back up that claim. So a former NASA mission specialist called Bob Exler, who worked on the Apollo program, obtained a W-2 form belonging to Bob Lazar.
Mm.
And this form, so I guess W-2, is that like over, what is that? Is
P,
that
something.
A P-45 over here?
Yeah. Proof of employment kind of thing. Yeah.
So this form confirmed that the United States Department of Naval Intelligence was a former employer of Bob Lazar.
I see. Okay.
And that is the department that Bob Lazar said that contracted him out to work in S-4.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And then here's another twist in the tale. So in 1990, Bob Lazar found himself in some legal problems, and he pled guilty to pandering a prostitution ring out in Nevada. So he was running. So there was a prostitute there, and he was running, I think, keeping records of like her payments and everything, and wanted to get some other prostitutes in on it.
She's pimping.
He was basically pimping, yeah.
Okay.
Bob.
But interestingly enough, during the trial, when he was under oath, claimed that he got a degree from MIT and worked at Los Alamos Physics Facility. So at this point, when he's under oath, in trial, you'd think if he was lying, it would be the time to say the truth. But he stuck to his guns. Either way.
Okay.
So it's interesting.
Yeah, no.
Could be too deep.
Too deep at that point.
Perhaps some 41 put it
in too deep.
I mentioned that his businesses were raided by the FBI. One of these raids happened in 2003. However, this was apparently because he was accused of violating the Federal Hazardous Substances Act and was apparently shipping restricted chemicals across state lines, which is the official reason.
There's a few dodgy dealings here with Bob, isn't there?
Yeah.
But he was charged. He was charged this in 2006, and the raid happened in 2003. So
3 years after.
And he said that when they did show up, it wasn't just like a few FBI agents; it was the whole shebang. Like people from seemingly hundreds of departments. Raided his small, tiny lab. So he thought that they were looking for this element, element 115. Speaking of, this is a pretty compelling point. So he said that element 115 doesn't occur naturally on Earth, and it's used as the fuel for this engine, and it's used to generate gravitational waves. Element 115 was synthesized in 2003, and it's now called Moscovium, a new artificial element that was created in 2003 after Bob made these claims about an artificial element that they were using.
Okay. What does this Moscovium do?
Is
it a fuel type?
No, I think they've only managed to synthesize like hundreds of atoms. They haven't been able to use it for anything.
Okay,
but Bob was saying that the stuff that they have in the base, he heard that they had like 500 pounds of the stuff, and it was in a stable form, so it was like a solid mass.
Okay.
But what we have currently is just like a few hundred atoms, apparently.
Compelling.
Right.
So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So. The idea, he said, that this element occurs in the star system where this craft came from, but not on Earth and not in the solar system.
Sure.
So that's interesting. He also said, back in 1989, that he used this hand scanner that measured the bones in your hand, and that was how he got about the base. Like, how, it would identify him.
Right,
it was like one of those things from a classic...
Mission Impossible.
It would scan his hand and he'd be allowed in. And people kind of ridiculed him for that. But then it came out later on that the military does use this.
Sure.
And there are photos of it, and it was kind of leaked.
What, and they measure bones? I thought it would be like fingerprints, no?
You would think that, but apparently it measures the length of your bones in your hand.
Wow, okay.
Which is, because apparently that's even more secure, I guess.
Well, you'd have to chop off someone's hand to get in.
You can't burn them off, I guess, or damage them. But you can damage them. You can lose them, as you said.
One of the last points was that he submitted himself back in the day for a polygraph test. Someone, a reporter in Los Angeles, asked him if he could do a polygraph test, and he immediately said, yes, please, let's do it. Independently run, independently verified. And it was true. It came out that he was telling the truth.
Still, I mean, as we know, they can still
they can be a bit.
They can be duped, but at the same time, still, you know, it adds to the case, doesn't it?
Yeah, if you're lying about something, you don't want to go, I absolutely 100% yes, please, want a polygraph test.
No, it's true. Yeah, you'd probably find a way around it.
And then the final point that I want to bring up, and this is actually, I want to give a shout out to a YouTuber whose video I watched for this. Derek Van Shake is his name, and he's this YouTuber who studies body language, and he watched the Joe Rogan video and a bunch of other interviews that Bob gave, and he was looking through them for any signs of deceit or deception. So these would be signs like self-comforting, so he would say something and then maybe like, you know, do what you're doing now, Martin.
I'm lying all the time.
Do self-conscious actions, so like if he says he did something but he's shaking his head when, you know, his body's saying something different than what he's saying. Defensiveness, avoiding details, duping delight, which is when he's lying but also smiling when you're like, you're subconsciously can't believe you're getting away with this lie kind of thing. Fidgeting, and then being convincing, not just conveying something. So
all of those he passed.
And apparently,
Wow.
So,
well, it just he's apparently, according to him, he said that if he was lying, he would be like the best actor in Hollywood. He doesn't necessarily say all these things are true.
Yeah,
but Bob believes them to be true.
Yeah. Yes,
he's not lying. Yeah. At the very least,
he's not lying from his own point of view.
Yeah,
no.
Okay,
either that, or he's either convinced it's either true, or he's convinced himself that it's true, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Which I think is a fair assessment.
Yeah.
I mean, like, to submit yourself to an unfiltered, extremely long, in-depth interview while maintaining these details and never contradicting yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's the thing. That's the thing. So I watched a video, I think it was on BuzzFeed. It was on something that it had a lawyer in it who was watching gameplay of Phoenix Wright. Yeah, have you seen Phoenix Wright? You know that game series where you play a lawyer? Anyway, it doesn't really matter. But the point is that she said that the way to catch someone out in a lie is to repeatedly press small aspects about the story. And they'll make a mistake, and then the whole thing will unravel. Mm. So if he's constantly maintained the same story and has never contradicted it, that's pretty...
It's remarkable.
That's remarkable, really.
Mm. Either that, or the majority of the story is true. He did work there,
but
he has to just perfect the bits that aren't true.
Yeah.
There's also the question of like false memories and stuff. If you tell a story over to yourself long enough,
you're going
to
believe it.
You're eventually going to believe it, and it will become ingrained in your mind as a legitimate memory. There's that possibility as well.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting, and it's captivating watching him because there's no tell that he's giving that he's lying.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's telling the truth, and he was, you know, part of the big alien project, or he's a big line pimp.
Mm. I mean, having said that, there are questionable things in his past, like that and the
smuggling across.
Yeah, true, but that doesn't necessarily change.
It doesn't. It doesn't
change whether he's telling the truth or not. I mean, it could be a reason why he was dismissed as well. It could be another reason that there were questionable practices. So in effect, it could actually back up his position.
I also kind of think that like whether he went to MIT or did this work, like he did put a jet engine in his car, and I can imagine
that sounds crazy, but if it worked, he'd have been a genius.
Yeah, but I can imagine though that the US government might have been desperate at this point trying to reverse engineer this thing, and they might not have got the best scientists for the job in because they didn't want to risk another massive explosion happening. So they're just getting these outside-the-box thinkers to come in and try the hand at it, maybe. I could see them not getting the most qualified person, but just get Bob, the jet engine guy, to come in and have a look at it.
You can also go with people who are a bit quirky like that anyway, because in case they go out and say these things after the fact, that people would kind of go, because of their personality, people would kind of go,
he's the guy that put an engine in his car and has a history of pimping.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so
you keep talking about the kids.
Child aliens. Yeah. No, that's a very good point. That's a very good point.
You know, it could go both ways. Very interesting man, though, Bob Lazar.
Really interesting. Really interesting.
Obviously incredibly clever as well. But it's true, like, the military and law enforcement as well don't often go down the conventional route. As we spoke about previously, when we spoke about psychics being used in crime, we spoke about that a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, the police use psychics as well. Not necessarily because they believe them, but because they believe that, you know,
it can, like, prompt some new avenues of new investigation.
Just from the point of view of their thinking, the way they think.
Exactly. So it could be that they brought him on board because he does think differently and is a bit of a character. That might be the exact reason they brought him on board.
Okay,
exactly. Yeah. But there you go. That's my story on Bob Lazar.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
I desperately need to watch the end. I'll start the Joe Rogan one. Need to watch the end of that, and desperately need to watch the Netflix doc too. Because now I'm even more interested than ever before.
What do you guys think? Have you seen the documentary? What did you think of it? And what do you think of Bob Lazar in general? Is he telling the truth, or is he deluded, or is he a liar?
A lot of people, after seeing the documentary, from what I've seen, the overall consensus was actually that he was more believable than before, than just hearing the story.
That might be as a result of, as you said,
the way it's edited and produced.
I mean, for sure. There are definitely details that the documentary doesn't cover. It kind of glosses over his legal troubles that he has. Doesn't really go into the details of them.
No documentary is really subjective, is it?
No, absolutely not. But I think you just need to be aware of that when you're watching.
Yeah, okay.
So, Alex, do we have any comments this week?
We do, yes. Good. Let's jump into a couple of them. So, Valorium says, although I never had an issue seeing your channel recommended in my feed, and it took me a few days to get used to the new name, it's grown on me a lot, and it really fits. Are you guys going to change your Twitter handles since they have all time in them, which I totally forgot about?
Yeah, we'll get around to it. We've changed the name on all of our platforms so far, so... just the handles to go.
Yeah, definitely. We'll get around to that. I mainly just said that comment because I had totally forgotten. So thank you for reminding me.
Yeah.
So Deutsch says, your podcasts really do drop at the perfect time. I've just cooked up a steak, got some whiskey out after a long day of work, and I see you've dropped me an hour-long podcast to fade into a bleary-eyed mess too. Much love, lads.
Which that guy's living the life.
Steak
that
and whiskey. Sounds,
living the life.
That does sound good. What whiskey drinking? Interested.
Connie Boys whiskey.
You're big into whiskey, aren't you?
I'm big into whiskey. I'm like that boy.
I have a few
different bottles of whiskey.
He's an enthusiast, but not in a healthy way.
A few different bottles today.
I finished that one. I don't know one anymore. Cool. Have fun.
See you later, Deutsch. Have fun.
And then finally, Green Pill Neo says, when did this channel change its name?
No, there wasn't a green pill.
Yeah, red pill, blue pill.
Green pill. Yeah. When did the channel...
I like it.
Oh, you're missing out.
Neo's Technicolor.
Neo. When did this channel change its name, and how come you changed it away from being from the naming custom of the other all-time channels? Which is interesting.
I think we've gone over a little bit, but changed its name, what, 2 weeks ago now? 2 weeks? A week? A week and a half? A
couple of weeks ago. Yeah. Just to reiterate, it was mainly due to the YouTube... algorithm.
Yeah, they basically weren't too fussed on having conspiracies in the channel title, so that's pretty much the main reason. Plus, I think that the content that we make now doesn't just focus solely on conspiracies, but we're doing other things like the All-Time Mystery Strand and also our In Plain Sight videos where we go out and do documentaries and stuff like that. So I think we cover a broader range of topics than we have done before, and I think the name reflects that well.
Yeah,
it's very, exactly. Very unprofessional for me to say so right here, but I loved the second episode of In Plain Sight.
Oh, good.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
Good. Ghost one.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was fun. That was fun. One. We're getting stuck in Epping Forest for about 3 hours. Wasn't so fun.
No. My favourite bit is when Alex keeps going, what?
You love a what? What?
Yeah. Do you know what is interesting, actually? Reading some of the comments of that video, people have put timestamps of, like, creepy sounds or
really?
Things in the background.
Oh, really?
And I'm like, and in a couple of them, you can actually hear, like, one of the comments said you can hear a scream at a certain point. And I listened back to it and I was like, what was that noise? Yeah. I don't remember that
noise.
You
don't remember the time.
Yeah.
But it's come through on the recording.
It's pretty creepy. Oh, so would recommend it. Go and give it a watch.
That.
Yeah, do.
Anyway,
Martin, what news have you got for us today?
So I've got an uplifting news story.
Good.
It's about the human heart and in particular, 3D printing the human heart.
It sounded like you're going to sing a song then. And it goes a little something like this.
Yeah, it goes something like this. Yeah, the heart is, yeah, so, no, I'm not going to do that. So basically, there are a team of researchers at the Carnegie Mellon University. And they've published a paper in Science, which, you know, a particular magazine, that details a new technique allowing anyone to 3D bioprint tissue scaffolds out of collagen. So this is the protein in the body. And this means that we're one step closer to engineering a 3D full-sized adult human heart.
And anyone can do it.
Well, they say anyone, but
supposedly,
but my guess is that only a select few people will.
Mm. Yeah, it's like these. Have you heard of biohackers?
Yes,
heard of them.
I have heard of them.
So they're people who use like open source CRISPR gene editing stuff, and like open source. They're the kind of people who I guess would also 3D print their own organs.
Mm.
But when they do this homebrew stuff, it doesn't always work.
No, there are some pretty shocking examples, aren't there?
Like a guy on a live stream chugged like some DNA that was meant to make him more muscular. And it, of course, nothing happened.
Oh, yeah.
But more seriously than that was a guy who had HIV.
Oh, this was bad, yeah.
And he injected himself with something, I think, that was supposed to, he thought maybe, cure HIV, but it actually doubled
the viral load.
HIV.
It doubled his viral load of.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah. So be careful 3D printing around, because that can
exactly
that's got a lot of capacity to go wrong.
Yeah. You don't really want to knock off 3D printed heart getting operated, getting put in.
No. Yeah.
Somewhere around the world. Not
operation, is it?
No. Exactly. It's not operation. But this is very, very exciting. Mm. So it's a technique known as free-form reversible embedding of suspended hydrogels. Acronym, FRESH.
Oh, very nice. It seems like they came up with the acronym first.
Yeah. Definitely. So it's allowed them to overcome the many challenges associated with existing 3D bioprinting methods and achieve unprecedented resolution and fidelity using soft and living materials. So this is pretty amazing. And there's quite a lot of details about... how they're going to do it, very scientific details. But the overall question I wanted to ask is, firstly, do you think this is a good thing based on what you were saying about biohacking? Based on, are there any potential dangers of this? And secondly, do you think this will be widespread for other organs as well?
I think that it will be at one point in the future. Mm. I think this sounds like it could be a way off until this becomes, you know, widely available.
Mm.
I think it's a good thing. I think it's definitely a good thing. Right?
Yeah, I don't see why it couldn't be a good thing. But like all good things, it can also be used badly.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, what would be the downside to this? Like kind of black market organs?
From my initial thought was black market organs, some of them being, claimed to be the real deal.
Yeah.
And then being transplanted into people by people that don't necessarily have the full medical qualifications. It just seems like there's room for this to go wrong, right?
Absolutely. But I think as you know, as medical science evolves, as long as more people can get better, I don't see that as a bad thing at all.
Yeah, I mean, in the US, there's apparently 4,000 patients waiting for a heart transplant, while there's millions of others worldwide.
Who can't
get onto a waiting list as well. So this would have a massive impact. And as well, probably not just for hearts, but for other organs too.
Yeah.
Mm. It can make a huge difference if we're able to replicate all organs around the body. So it would be very, very interesting where this goes in the future.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And yeah, I definitely think if they can do it for the heart, they surely could do it with other organs, although I guess there's different chemical makeups with other things.
So I was like, surely that's the most important one. So that's, but then the liver has to generate.
Yeah. I guess with the heart, as they say, the majority of this is the collagen. I'm not a biologist, so I don't know about this. But in terms of the structure of the heart, it seems like collagen for that is definitely the major ingredient, as it were.
it's just like a muscle, isn't it? Like a pump.
Exactly.
So it's quite mechanical.
Well, yeah. Can you actually just, does it have to be collagen? Can it just be titanium?
No, it doesn't have to be. Steel. It can't be titanium, but it can be, oh it can be other
soft. I want to live forever, Martin. Yeah.
But it can be other soft materials. One called fibrin, alginate, and hyaluronic acid. So these are all different tissues that can be used in engineering a heart. So yeah, so basically it means that the open source nature of this means that anyone can use this. I mean, they've said here that it can be used from people from medical labs to high school science classes, can have low cost, high performance 3D bioprinters. I mean,
that is going to go badly.
you'd hope that they were doing it in order to form a structure, which they can then examine and learn from, as opposed to them printing a heart for someone's use.
Yeah. Imagine that as like a thing in a classroom, just like, Timmy, do you want our new heart today?
Yeah, or like, you know, knowing teenage boys and what they would like more of.
Oh, goodness.
Printing stuff like that is not going to go. It's not going to go well for anyone. That's really interesting, though, to open source, though.
Yeah. And also surely very encouraging for those people on the waiting list and people that aren't even on a waiting list because they can't have a transplant or whatever where they are. So it could definitely opens up the door. So yeah, I just thought I'd bring that to the table.
It's interesting because they've been using parts of like pig hearts.
Pigs, pigs have been used for a while.
Although, you know, that should kind of alleviate that at least.
Yeah,
although I don't know whether or not, you know, if a part of your heart is not working, is it better to remove it and just put a new one in, or is it better to change that one part?
I imagine trying to put a whole new heart in is fairly risky.
I imagine that's probably not the basis of a last case scenario kind of thing, maybe.
True.
But also, I mean, you've got like horrible things like there's the Chinese organ harvesting situation.
Yeah.
So if this could alleviate that, because that's basically supply and demand, isn't it? Like the reason that exists is because people need the organs. So
exactly.
If you could take that away, then hopefully that would stop that.
So I walked past a protest banner and boards describing what happens in China with the organ harvesting every day in Chinatown.
Wow.
So there's people protesting that all the time.
That's absolutely horrific.
Because it's pretty barbaric.
It's so dystopian.
It's mad.
It's all mad.
Yeah. So this is hopefully a bit of good news there.
I took your uplifting story and I broke it down.
Hopefully a bit of good news. There clearly are some downsides if it's abused.
Yeah.
But what a world we live in where this could be possible going forward.
What a time to be alive.
I imagine that we're probably years and years and years and years off. But for those being born now, it could be
technology is only advancing quicker.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Fingers crossed.
Exactly.
For my,
future-proof
heart.
What do you think? If you needed a 3D printed heart, would you print it yourself? And would you open source? Why not? Yeah. And would you risk having a collagen 3D printed heart? I mean, there's certain scenarios where you probably wouldn't have a choice. But
I take it over nothing.
Over no heart at all.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Well, thanks for that, Martin.
No, I thought it was an interesting and amazing little story. But now, as you guys have all been waiting for, even you at home, you can play along, definitely play along with this one at home. It is quiz time.
The new Dale Winter, isn't he? He's so there.
Yeah, exactly. Precise. Nice. Cool. Okay, so quiz. So, Sam, Alex, are you ready for a quiz?
I was literally born ready.
I was about to say that, so yeah.
You're also born ready. You're both born ready for the quiz.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So this quiz is slightly different than one I've done before. You basically have to guess whether each of these names is an 80s, some of them are actually noughties, 80s/noughties dynamic duo from a TV show, or whether it's the name of a law firm.
Okay.
Okay. 80s and noughties, but no 90s.
Could be 90s. Dynamic Joe, but most of them are from the 80s.
80s to noughties.
Okay. Yeah, I know that most of them are from the 80s. I think one of them is definitely from the noughties.
Okay. I'm just waiting on Rosemary and
Time. Yeah, that's what I was waiting for as well.
We'll see.
Number one, Rosemary and Time.
Okay, so you guys have to guess whether this is a dynamic duo or a law firm. You both get a guess for each one.
Yeah.
And then I'll just tell you if you're right. You can go for the same answer as well.
Wait, so hang on a sec. So when you say it, do we then say the TV show it's from?
No, I'll say the name of the duo.
Yeah.
And then you guys say whether you think it's a dynamic duo or a law firm. Okay, number one. Simon and Simon. A dynamic duo or a law firm?
I haven't heard of Simon and Simon, so I'm going to say a law firm because that is an equally ridiculous law firm.
Dynamic duo.
It is brothers Rick and AJ, short for Andrew Jackson, Simon, run a private detective agency in San Diego. Rick is a street smart, good old boy Vietnam vet, while AJ is a book smart, by the rules type. They are a crime fighting duo.
Oh,
well
done, Sam. Well done.
Thank you. Very good.
I am that.
Okay. Question number two.
From what, though?
From Simon and Simon.
Oh, they're cool. Okay, right.
Yeah.
Wow.
that hit piece of media.
almost all of these are named. I made it so almost all of them are something in something.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Only one of them isn't, and you'll probably get it. Hopefully.
Okay.
Number two, Rizzoli and Isles.
That's a TV. That's a dynamic duo, I think.
Dynamic duo.
Yeah.
Alex.
Sam seemed pretty confident, so I'm going to go for a dynamic duo as well.
Perhaps their strikingly different personalities make their relationship between Detective Jane Rizzoli and Medical Examiner Moore Isles is so effective. Jane, the only female cop in Ever. Boston's homicide division, is tough, relentless. Ray lets her guard down, while the impeccably dressed Maura displays a sometimes icy temperament. She is, after all, more comfortable among the dead than the living.
Oh,
they are.
Where
a dynamic
can I watch
duo.
This, Martin?
So well done, both of you. That's a dynamic duo. So that's 2-1 to Sam.
Fair enough.
Okay, number three. We've had Simons and Simons. Now we have Simmons and Simmons. Dynamic duo or law firm?
I'm going to say law firm.
Yeah, it's got to be a law firm.
Simmons
is
Simmons.
Yeah.
You reckon? Time and time again.
Oh, no. No.
Business across the world bring us their toughest commercial challenges.
Yes.
They call on Simmons and Simmons for our international reach and our expert legal advice.
Okay, yes. Cool.
Law firm. Yes. Well done. That's 3-2.
Have you just been Googling? Is everything all right? Why are you Googling loads of lawyers?
He's been Googling crime fighting duos. Yeah.
I thought, basically, I found out that Robin wasn't here, I thought this may just be me and Alex doing this.
I thought, I need legal representation.
if he goes in for repairs and doesn't come back, so I thought, what could we do if it was just one person with a quiz? So
I see. Okay. Yeah. Okay. See, right.
Yeah, but I thought it still works with two.
And
yeah,
it does.
It's a bit different.
Good. Yeah,
I like it. Okay, I like it so far.
Okay.
So what's the score? 3-2 to Sam.
3-2 to Sam.
Okay.
Yeah, got all them right so far, Sam.
Thank you.
Okay. Number four, Cagney and Lacey, crime fighting duo or legal firm?
I'm going to go law firm.
Crime fighting duo, I think.
Mary Beth Lacey and Chris Cagney are female police officers in New York City.
Why are you so good at this, Sam?
The women are partners and friends, but they lead different personal lives. Cagney is a single, career-minded woman, while Lacey is a married mother. In addition to going after the bad guys, the ladies have to combat sexism in the male-dominated workplace. Good. They're a crime-fighting duo.
Have they all been women so far?
No,
like all the police. Simon and Simon.
Oh, yeah, Simon and Simon, yeah.
Simon and Simon,
yeah. My apologies.
That's a really redundant statement. They both lead different personal lives. Well, yeah.
They always do.
Everyone doesn't? Does, don't they?
Just in case there was some confusion over them partners and friends.
Yeah. Oh, Brit. Okay.
Yeah, police partners. Good. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Okay.
4-2 to Simon.
4-2, number five.
Wait, what?
Question number five.
Oh, yeah, because we can both get points. Yeah.
Yes,
makes
sense. Yeah. Number five, Lichten and Bright. Is it a crime-fighting duo or a law firm?
I don't know why. I'm always naturally drawn to the law firm.
Yeah,
I think I've only gone law firm so far. I'm going to go for law firm.
I think that is law firm, though.
Lichten and Bright.
Lichten and Bright, PC... Lichten and Bright are PC are experienced New York labor and employment lawyers who put their clients' interests first. We help people stand up for their rights in the workplace.
Good.
They're a law firm. Well done.
Thank you.
Cool. Very good. 5 out of 5 for Sam, blimey.
Whoa.
Not bad. 3 out of 5 is good, though, Alex.
Law firms.
Not bad at all.
Sam's experience in this regard is like, no, that's not a law firm.
I've used all of them. All of them. And I don't want
to
say why.
I've been in trouble loads of times, but let's just say it's something to do with Bob Lazar.
Yeah.
Okay. Number six. Shearman and Sterling. Crime-fighting duo or law firm?
That's got to be a crime-fighting duo.
I think that's a law firm.
Well, Sam's been right this whole time. I'm going to be so upset if this is a law firm. No, I've got to get some points. I've got to start getting points back. I'm going to go crime-fighting duo.
I'm going law firm.
Our success is built on our client's success.
Yes!
His name's Sterling.
This guy, I loved it when I saw it. I thought that's amazing. We have a long and distinguished history of supporting our clients, whatever they do. Or wherever they do business, from major financial centres to emerging and growing markets. They're a law firm.
So what's that now? 6-3 to Sam?
Yes.
Come on. I'm just trying to maintain my clean streak.
Actually, I don't know who this is more embarrassing for, to be honest.
Definitely you.
Yeah, I was just trying to regain some. Yeah.
Wow. 7 out of 7. 3 out of 7. I mean, just trying to think. It's okay. It's okay still.
Okay, mate. Don't worry.
You've got time to get back into it.
Okay.
If you get all them wrong.
Well,
could happen. Question number seven. Well, it's just number seven, isn't it? A question.
Yeah.
Anyway, Slaughter and May.
Oh.
Crime fighting duo or law firm?
I feel like I've heard of that, but I'm going to look really embarrassed if I get this wrong now. I think that's a crime fighting duo.
Okay.
Sam? Slaughter and May.
Hmm.
That sounds so much like a crime fighting duo that I think it's a law firm, which is why I'm going to say law firm again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Slaughter and May is regarded as one of the most prestigious law firms in the world.
Yes.
What have I heard of them?
We advise on high-profile and groundbreaking international transactions. I have an excellent and varied client list that includes leading corporations, financial institutions, and governments. They are a law firm.
Suppose they couldn't have gone with May and Slaughter.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that's right. Good point. Good point.
Oh, dear.
7 out of 7. Wow.
So that's 7-3 now.
7-3.
Excellent.
Number 8. Hardcastle and McCormick.
McCormick, come on, that's a crime-fighting duo. It's got to be.
That's a crime-fighting duo.
Los Angeles Super Court Judge Milton C. Hardcastle, an eccentric judge notorious for being strict with the law in both his duties and towards defendants, is retiring. With file drawers filled with 200 people who escaped conviction due to legal technicalities, the judge, inspired by his childhood hero, the Lone Ranger, desires to make the criminals answer for their crimes. Mark McCormick is a smart-mouthed, streetwise car thief. It's a judge and a car thief.
He's inspired by the Lone Ranger, so he steals cars.
No. The judge is.
Oh, the judge. He's inspired by the Lone Ranger.
And who? Mark McCormick.
A judge.
Mark McCormick. Yeah. Mark McCormick is the one who steals cars, and there was more on him, but I just thought it was too long, so I cut off there.
It was a bit. Yeah. And he steals cars.
and he steals cars is all we need to know. So you got a judge working with someone who steals cars.
Angel summoned on the BMX Bandit. Reminds me of that.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, nice.
Well done.
So that's 8-4.
How many are there? Two left. Oh my god, I need to get all of them.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically about you getting them all right now. Yeah. I can't come back, but
question number 9. Harper and Odell. Law firm or crime fighting duo?
That's really hard.
That is really hard. I'm gonna go crime fighting duo.
Harper and Odell. Law firm.
Harper and Odell. Coming soon. So what does that mean? Coming soon.
That means that
on their website it says coming soon. Oh! They're a law firm.
Yes. I need to get this last one. I have to get it.
Nine out of nine.
It's the most important thing in my life right now.
I mean, to be honest, if you don't get this, then you know you may have won, but you've lost.
Oh.
Number 10.
Bring screen time, please.
Crockett and Tubbs.
Oh,
he's got it. Crime fighting duo. Yes,
they are. They're from Miami Vice. Crime fighting duo, 10 out of 10.
And Tubbs.
That's a handshake. Well done, Sam. Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not?
Not even upset. That was just impressive.
Very good.
Maybe I found my niche.
I think so. How did you guys go on at home? Hopefully, you guys enjoyed that.
That was amazing. That's the
best thing that's ever happened to me, yeah.
That was great.
Yeah, no, very well done. I don't think it was that easy, but. Maybe some
clearly
of them more
not.
Easier than
I
others.
Think Sam is just insanely good at determining.
Law firms.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, if you guys enjoyed that at home, I might do another one of those in the future, maybe.
Do it.
That's great.
That was kind of fun.
Yeah. That was good.
Difficult
that was
to.
Good. Very good.
Yeah. I'm not sure how many. That one works because it's one and two. Yeah. If there are any other kind of ones like that that you guys at home can think of that would work, let us know. If you have your own, send it
Marley
in.
Marley and Marley. Oh, no, they're not. They're neither. They're ghosts and the Muppet Christmas Carol. Anyway,
thanks guys. Thanks for playing.
Yeah,
that's all right. My actual pleasure.
And thanks for being on the show.
No, yeah. 101 facts.
101 facts. Yes. What's coming up this week? We've got a video about Thailand.
Oh,
yes.
Nice.
I know. Be excited. And then, well, I can't reveal what's coming up next week. You're gonna have to find out on All Time Tens though.
Mm.
Which me and Martin appear our faces on.
Oh, yes.
Appear our faces, like you say it. Anyway, we've got a video today about theories to do with Area 51.
Yes, that's a definite one to watch.
Absolute one to watch.
If you like everything to do with Bob Lazar, I'm going to assume that you're going to want to watch that
video.
Exactly.
So. Yeah, exactly. And then there's something else on Sun. Oh, no, it's to do with iconic characters you didn't know were ripoffs.
Oh,
nice.
Interesting.
Yep. So, nice. Check those out.
Superb. Nice. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening and watching at home, and we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.